I'm Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. Welcome to our court session today. Today is a different format from what you're used to. We are in off-site mode, sorts of, due to the coronavirus pandemic and our need for physical distancing. Our grand courtroom is empty today, but our court is in session. I'm speaking to you from my chambers. Each of our justices is here as well. They are in their respective chambers at the Thomas J. Moyer Ohio Judicial Center in Columbus. The attorneys in each of the 8 cases we will hear over the next 2 days will also be appearing remotely. The video conferencing signal is being transmitted via the Ohio channel, which is streaming it live on the internet and broadcasting it on TV, just as they do for every session of conference. In our courtroom. I'm grateful that we have this technology. Courts must be open and accessible to the public, even in a crisis such as this. Before we begin this morning, I'd like to individually thank the staff that made it possible for us to safely hold court today. From the Office of Judicial Services, Michael Woods, Milt Newsom, Dean Hogan, Katrina Webb, and Diane Hayes. From the Office of Information Technology, Robert Stewart, Randall Drum, Cynthia Wendell, Jeff Campbell, and Jeremy Johnson. The Office of Clerk, Sandra Grosco and Amy Wrights. The Office of Court Security, our Marshal, Bill Crawford. The Office of Public Information, Edward Miller, Ann Yeager, Eli Margolis, Sarah Stifler, Mason Farr, Chava Sukos. The Judicial College, Christy Tull and Sam Campbell. The Ohio Channel, Liesl Bonneau, Ann Fife, Jesse Bethia, and Toby Caserta. Thank you all for helping us put this on this morning, and also to help us maintain our safety. Our first case this morning is 2019-493, the State of Ohio XREL AWMS Water Solutions LLC et al. Versus James Zieringer, Director, Ohio Department of Natural Resources et al. For the appellant, we have Mr. Van Such.
Good morning, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I would like to reserve 4 minutes for my rebuttal, please. I'm Matthew Van Such, and we represent the AWMS appellants in this regulatory taking action that was filed in the 11th District against the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, the Division of Oil and Gas Resources Management, and their chiefs. This case raises significant constitutional questions about the fundamental right to regulate property and the deference afforded to administrative agencies who exercise the state's regulatory authority. But it's premature to try to answer those questions and to balance the competing interests because the 11th District, sitting as the trier of fact, ignored genuine issues of material fact, critical to AWMS's claims and the state's defenses, applied the wrong legal standards, and granted summary judgment. When the crux of any takings claim is the economic impact on the property owner, it's remarkable that the 11th District simply ignored the fact that both sides presented testimony from expert witnesses who disagreed. The court didn't even mention the economic impact or the competing opinions. There are even several questions of material fact underlying these calculations. These include the capacity of the number 2 well, the alleged alternative uses of the facility, and whether the number 1 well could be independently operated. And then if we step back, there are even more questions if we look at the division's actions and why it was taking decisions that it was making. This starts with the promised statewide policy on induced seismicity, the lack thereof. This was the sole reason why the suspension order was upheld in the first place. Further, there are questions about the scientific reliability of AWMS's plan to resume operations, which the division hasn't taken any official action.
Counsel, I wonder if I can interrupt you there for just a moment. The state in its brief seems to say, you know what, this is all really in your hands. You can file a new plan. It's really up to you to give them a product that they can work with. How do you respond to that?
Back in September 2014, AWMS submitted information that would be part of the plan to resume operations. In February 2015, the division said, here are 14 additional criteria that we're considering. AWMS responded to all of those. There was no further communications between all of that until we got to through the administrative appeal to the Franklin County Common Plea. That whole time, the division was actually sitting on a response to AWMS's plan, but they were waiting on the policy for induced seismicity. So Judge Pocroft ordered the parties to try to work together to put together a plan that would allow AWMS to resume operations. What Chief Simmers proposed at that time simply is so expensive, has no scientific basis, and really would destroy the economic value of the facility. So when you ask, what does AWMS need to do? AWMS normally would be able to challenge a decision of the chief through the administrative appeal process, go to the Oil and Gas Commission, and determine whether the actions of the chief would be reasonable or not. The chief simply hasn't taken any action that would enable AWMS to go through that administrative route to be able to challenge the technical aspects of that. The other alternative is simply to just give in and say, yes, that's fine, we'll do all of that, even though it doesn't make economic sense and doesn't have any scientific basis. There's also a genuine issue of material fact, Your Honor, about what the reasonableness of the expectations would be. That is an important factor for the Penn Central test. But I would like to, before we go back to why we should remand, or this court should remand back to the 11th District, there are some important facts that were established through the administrative appeal. The first one is that the seismic events that led to the wells being shut down were at such low levels that they didn't pose an imminent threat of harm to public health or safety. Second, AWMS wasn't violating any rule, regulation, permit, or policy condition. Third, it simply isn't the state's policy to eliminate all risk of seismic events. Fourth, injection can take place at the well without putting the public safety or the environment in significant jeopardy. The only question was what those levels would be. And fifth, Chief Simmers was clear that he didn't want the well operating until a state policy on induced seismicity was in place. And he wouldn't even consider AWMS's plan until he was done working with the interstate commissions to develop and implement a policy on induced seismicity. AWMS brought two types of regulatory takings claims based on Chief Simmers' actions and inactions after the suspension order in September 2014, a categorical taking under Lucas and a partial taking under Penn Central. AWMS alleges that its entire leasehold at the industrial site, which is an income-producing property, was taken. This includes the number one well, the number two well, and the associated equipment and tangible personal property. A categorical taking claim asks whether a government regulation deprived an owner of all economically beneficial or viable uses of the property without a case-specific inquiry into the public interest advanced in support of the restraint. AWMS met that threshold with lay and expert testimony that the continued enforcement of the suspension order deprived AWMS of all economically viable uses of its investment. And there were no other viable uses of the property available to AWMS.
Now, so what about the operation of the well that was left in its present state?
Yes,
you had two wells there. One is operational, right?
One could be operational, yes, Your Honor. It was not subject to a suspension order. That is correct.
Okay. And would that not... are you saying that we need to divide the property and then therefore divide the values and do some sort of calculation? Not we, but the parties?
No, Your Honor. We are saying that the entire property is the leasehold, which includes both wells and everything associated with it. We're not breaking the denominator down into different wells. We're looking at the entire capacity of the facility and the economics.
One is still functional, correct?
One could be functional, but is not operating at this time because the revenues that were generated were not even meeting the operational expenses to run the facility to operate that. And therefore, we believe, and was supported by expert testimony, that this is not an economically viable use of the property. Simply generating revenue on this property doesn't mean that that's an economically viable use. We haven't returned We haven't returned even a profit on the property. And this court has looked in prior cases as to the economies of scale, that what would be needed to be done to make the property economically viable.
If we were to send this back, as you suggest, what would that proceeding look like? Would the Court of Appeals hear the same witnesses and weigh the evidence in that way? Or any thoughts on that?
Yes, Your Honor. We had actually already been preparing for trial and had submitted trial testimony of one of our expert witnesses from Miami University. We would anticipate that it would proceed as any fact-finding trial where the witnesses would be presented. They would be subject to cross-examination. Their expert witnesses' qualifications would be examined. Their opinions would be examined. The facts underlying their opinions would be examined. And the trier of fact would have a full opportunity to be able to determine the credibility of those witnesses and ultimately the opinions that would be rendered. And then the 11th District would issue findings of fact based on that. And then they would apply the facts, the law to the facts. And then this court would then determine whether the application of the law to the facts was correct. But the 11th District didn't do that. And in fact, it construed facts against AWMS when there were competing opinions, even on Chief Justice, on well number one, whether that was economically viable. So this court is not really in the position to be making these significant constitutional determinations when you have questions of fact, for example, on the operation of well number one. AWMS, Chief Justice, didn't purchase a mineral estate like an RTG, but we also didn't purchase a greenfield that we could even farm on that might generate revenue and that there are other uses. That makes this case unique and different than other zoning cases where people
are you saying there's no other use for this property other than these wells?
That's correct, Your Honor. We have a leasehold interest in the property that allows us to only inject into the ground the operations that are associated with that. We do not have this 5.5-acre industrial site to put up a manufacturing building or to even farm if we wanted to, which is commonly heard in zoning cases. This is a leasehold interest. And in fact, the royalties, the consideration to support the leasehold interest are the royalties based on the injection. So everything is tied up into the injection. And so the property that is being taken is an income producing property, not a greenfield. It is not recorded separately like a mineral interest would be, but it is certainly not a greenfield and a regular piece of property. We also believe that there's genuine issues of material fact on the factors that are considered under the Penn Central test. That includes the severity of the economic impact. It includes what those expectations were of AWMS and investors and the character of the action that was taken by the government. The character of the action isn't whether the government action was lawful, appropriate, or reasonable, or designed to protect the public. The question is whether the burden for remedying the societal problem is in adjusting the benefits and burdens of economic life is to promote the common good has been imposed on all of society as opposed to one party. And with that, Your Honor, I would like to reserve my rebuttal time.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Your Honor, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. This case involves a narrow question, a regulatory taking claim based on an order that suspended the operation of one of AWMS's well, but did not permanently ban it. It is not about the merits of that order or about AWMS's plan to restart operations. But those issues have been decided. This court declined to address them, and it declined AWMS's motion for reconsideration on that point. But AWMS cannot succeed on its regulatory taking claim for at least two reasons. First, it is well established that no regulatory taking occurs when the government acts to protect public health, protect public safety, or prevent a nuisance. And second, even if AWMS could get past that threshold bar, it cannot.
Did you raise that nuisance argument below? Your opponent says you didn't raise that.
Yes, we did, Your Honor. If you look to pages 20 through 22 of the motion for summary judgment that was filed, this is the very same arguments we were making, the same citations to Lucas, the same reliance on the background principles of property law, which is, and this is what animates this whole doctrine that you can't, you are not due compensation when the government acts to protect public health, is that there is no common law property right to use your property in a way that harms another. And so that's why this court in Shelley, the Supreme Court in Lucas, the Supreme Court in Keystone Bitumnus Coal Association said that no compensation is due when the government acts to protect public health.
Well, and I think was there any finding below, though, that this was a nuisance that could have been regulated under common law principles?
Well, Your Honor, I think 2 points. One, it doesn't need to be in the proceeding in the 11th District because it's res judicata, because that was the entire course of litigation this court declined to review in the prior appeal. But second, and this goes,
there was no finding that it was a nuisance, that the state, that it was, could be regulated under state nuisance law in the prior proceeding, was there?
Well, Your Honor, that gets to the second point, which is it doesn't have to be what is known as a common law nuisance. I'd point the court to the language in Lucas. Justice Scalia, writing for the majority, gave as the quintessential example a nuclear power plant that was later discovered to sit upon a fault line. And the court held there that there would be no compensation due if the government instructed them to dismantle the plant. Now, a safely operating nuclear power plant is not what would traditionally be a common law nuisance, but it still would be an action to protect public health and protect public safety. And here we may not have a nuclear power plant, but we absolutely have a fault line. And we have a fault line that was being triggered by AWMS's activities. And that was the entire basis for the prior litigation. AWMS was challenging the order that they temporarily shut down until they could prove they could operate safely. And also an issue in that case was the plan that AWMS offered to restart. You heard today some discussion about that plan. But the Oil and Gas Commission decision, which was affirmed by the 10th.
I'm sorry, quick, go back to Lucas just for 1 second. I mean, as I understand Lucas, what the court said was that it had to be something that the state could have prescribed under common law nuisance principles. And how do we know that from this record?
Your Honor, I think I would just direct you to actually the 10th District's opinion in the prior case, the one the court declined to review. And look at paragraph 47, for example, of that decision, where there was a whole discussion about, you know, are these induced seismic activities caused by AWMS, is that a public threat? And the court noted that allowing it to continue and refusing to reverse the chief's decision would be predicting what is likely, is difficult at best, and could be extremely dangerous. And so it's already been discussed, it's already been decided that allowing AWMS to continue its operation when they are causing seismic activities is dangerous. And I think the relevant point here is that AWMS has said, well, these activities, the seismic activities were minor, but they were increasing. And the testimony in the prior proceeding was such that there is no way of knowing if something is going to jump from a 2.0 to a 4.0, because that's what's important too, is the day before AWMS applied for their permit here, there was a 4.0 magnitude earthquake that had occurred in a different well that was about 7 miles away. And that occurred even after the injection had stopped. And so this was an issue of protecting the public from earthquakes. And I think no matter how you read Lucas, no matter how you read Keystone, that protecting the public from earthquakes is a valid use of the state's power.
Counsel, with the prior opinions, was there not a premise that was going to be temporary, that the suspension order itself was temporary, that the state needed to take some time, create a policy? I mean, at what point is this not a temporary suspension?
Your Honor, I think, yes, that is a premise, but it goes to your earlier question, because here the delay is not necessarily attributable to the state. It is attributable to AWMS. The state has stood ready and willing. If AWMS could submit a plan to show that they would operate safely, they could resume operations. They've declined to do so.
But isn't that a subjective finding by the department or by the division? I mean, to me, does that not suggest a factual question about what is necessary and have they met what is necessary?
Well, 2 points, Your Honor. One, they submitted a plan that's already been addressed. And two, if they have an avenue that is not this litigation to reopen, if they were to apply for a permit modification, for example, they could go to the division and submit a new plan and the division would have to act on it. They would either approve it and they could resume operations. They would deny it. It could be appealed to the Oil and Gas Commission. It could be appealed to the 10th and ultimately to this court. But what AWS has done is they submitted one plan back prior to the oil and gas hearing. The Oil and Gas Commission at paragraph 20 found that it was generic and inadequate and the plan lacked scientific and quantitative support to show how the plan would minimize risks. So their old plan has already been ruled on. If they want to submit a new plan, then the division will take action and then they can appeal that and they can have their day in court. But what they can't do is they can't file a taking claim. They can't, they have a separate mandamus action that is already ongoing in the 10th district asking the division to rule again on the plan that they already ruled on. And the magistrate in that case has denied that mandamus petition. They filed their objections. And so we're waiting on the 10th district to rule. So they have an avenue. It's just AWS hasn't taken it. And now I think, Your Honor, you also asked about this statewide regulation. And the state, the premise is true. The conclusion ended up being a little different. The state always knew that it needed to learn more about seismic activity induced by deep well injection. And they did undertake a study. And they thought at the beginning that it would end up being codified in a regulation. But what they discovered after extensive study is that the geology of these deep wells varies. And so there has to be a case-by-case analysis. And this is in our OPJUR that we filed with the court in the prior proceeding. We discussed all of this and said, we did do a study and they put together what's known as a primer on potential injection-induced seismicity. And it's in the mandamus record at Exhibit C. It was discussed by Ivan Wong in his mandamus deposition. And so they did study. So they didn't misrepresent what they were doing. All they said is at the end of the study, our conclusion was a little different than what we thought it would be, which is what you want. You want them to follow the science. And I'd also point out that we have maintained throughout both the prior proceeding and this proceeding that AWS can submit a plan. It was testified to the
Council, I heard your opponent say that what would be required is just economically impossible for the company to meet, that is not based in science and other challenges to it.
Your Honor, if they wish to submit a different plan to the division that they think is based in science, the one that hasn't already been adjudicated, then they're free to do so. And we can approve or deny it. And if we deny it, then they can challenge the science behind our denial in a later proceeding. But we have given them a plan and we think it is based in science. It was part of the prior litigation. And so that also, even if they disagree with it, it shows that one of the premises of their argument that we have been hiding the ball or not telling them what they need to do is simply not the case, because there is a plan. It's in the mandamus record in Exhibit Q. It was submitted as part of the prior proceeding. And so at the very least, they know what is expected of them by the division. They may disagree, and that may be a disagreement for the Oil and Gas Commission in a different new proceeding, but it is not a taking. And I would also like to address the Penn Central arguments they've made about investment-backed expectations, because I think we've discussed this health and safety component, and that does satisfy the character of government action, which Keystone said is critical in taking analysis.
Council, could we just get, before you get too far into that, let me ask you, when we should be looking at whether or not the company can present a plan, if their excuse is, or their rationale, I should say, is that we've looked at the plan, we've looked what the state is telling us we need to do, and the cost is prohibitive. We cannot use this site for its intended purpose. And one of its intended purposes, of course, is to conduct this as a profitable business. We can't do that. This is a taking.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that goes back to Lucas, because if they cannot operate their well in a way that does not cause seismic activity, that is not a taking. It's not a taking.
I understand that. I understand that part. But let's look at whether or not it's a feasible usage of the property if the intent is to run a profitable business.
Well, Your Honor, I think that I'm maybe getting a little confused, so please correct me if I'm not answering your question fully, is I think they can either show that they can operate this safely and profitably. If they can't operate it safely, if operating safely requires them to be unprofitable, then it's their choice not to operate, but it is not a taking. And then there's the question, and you had asked earlier about the parcel as a whole. I think that there's some important questions there. I point the court to Tahoe Sierra, where the U.S. Supreme Court said you can't define your interest in such a way as to be circular for a taking component. And I give the example of, what if you had a lease that said the only thing you can do with this is to operate a bar, and then you're serving underagers, you lose your liquor license, and the fact that you've lost your liquor license and can no longer operate a bar doesn't mean that a taking has occurred, because you've so narrowly defined property interest. And so Muir v. Wisconsin talks about how to define the parcel as a whole. And they said there's no case by case. It's a case by case analysis. There's no hard and fast rule. And so I think that, you know, you don't have to write a clear rule about when a leasehold is or is not sufficient, but it's enough to say that if you so narrowly define your interest and then you don't get a permit because you can't do something within the bounds of the law, that's not a taking. And so I hope that's responsive. I do want to touch briefly.
Can you go back to the Penn Central issue, how there's not a fact dispute?
Yes, and I think that first, there's not a fact dispute over the character of government action because it's already been established in the prior proceeding. But second, there's not a fact dispute about the investment-backed expectations, because I point the court to Deposition Exhibit 12, which is their own investor documents. This is literally their investment-backed expectations. And they say in there that, one, we know this is a regulated area. Two, we know that there is induced seismic activity in this vicinity. And three, we know that if we cause seismic activity, our operation could be shut down. And so Ruckelshaus v. Monsanto said that the absence of investment-backed expectations can be dispositive. And so here, if you just look at the written words, their own investment-backed expectations show why they can't satisfy Penn Central. Now, I very briefly want to touch on the evidentiary question, because I think it is a red herring in this case, and for three reasons. One, the burden on establishing mandamus is on the party seeking it to show by clear and convincing evidence they're entitled to the writ. And if there's a dispute over evidence, it means they fail to carry their burden. Two, I point the court to your own practice. Justice DeWine, you asked, what would the proceedings look like? Well, this court regularly resolves questions of fact in mandamus without a trial. I point the court to its recent decision in Nguyen, for example. There was no trial, but there most certainly were disputes about facts, and the court resolved them. And three, I think this is going back to the point I made with Justice Fischer about the investment-backed expectations, and also the fact that it is res judicata, that they were causing earthquakes. The division issued this temporary suspension order saying, stop doing what you're doing until you can prove to us that there will not be future earthquakes. This will not pose a safety hazard. And I would just one last point about the fact this is temporary. Under Tahoe Sierra, the U.S. Supreme Court had said there can be no categorical taking under Lucas when it is only a temporary moratorium rather than a permanent ban. And that's where we talk about subdividing the interest there. It's temporal. Here, it also relates to the leasehold. And so for these reasons, Your Honor, we would ask you to affirm the 11th District and to hold that no taking has occurred either under Lucas or under Penn Central. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel?
Your Honor, I would like to address 2 points in rebuttal. First, what was actually found in the administrative appeal, and then second, the nuisance issue. If you look at paragraph 20 of the commission's decision, it is not the commission's finding of fact, nor is the conc- Commission's conclusion of law that AWMS's plan was inadequate or that Chief Simmers's plan was adequate. In fact, Chief Simmers didn't even submit a plan because he wanted more time, and the 10th District held that he would be speculating at that time. So there was no adjudication through the administrative appeal as to what would be the conditions that would allow AWMS to operate. So now AWMS is in regulatory purgatory because the division is saying, well, here's the plan that you should do. And we will find that it's simply not economically viable and isn't based on scientific basis, but there's no way for us to go back to the commission to have that adjudicated unless we agree with the plan. So,
well, Council, what about trying to seek a permit modification? As your friend on the other side says, if you were to do that, and if that were to be denied, then you'd have the ability to appeal from a denial of a modification.
In the many, many, many attempts to communicate with the division, that's the first time that the division has ever suggested, why don't you just ask for a permit modification? It's been in this oral argument. I'd also like to address the nuisance issue. We have a finding from the 10th District that the wells didn't pose an imminent threat of harm to the public health or safety, and that further injection could occur at that site. And so, yes, this court recognized, Lucas, that if a regulation can result in a categorical taking, but no compensation is due if the claimant's use of the land violates the background principles of property nuisance law, okay? But first, if we go back and actually look at pages 20 to 22 of the motion for summary judgment, that's not what the state was arguing. The state was arguing about the character of the governmental action. It wasn't arguing that this was a nuisance. Second, if we look at what exactly is a nuisance and we use RTG for that purpose, a saltwater injection well isn't a nuisance, either an absolute one or a qualified one. Third, it's not the state's policy to prevent seismic events that are caused by humans. If it did, then the state wouldn't allow the wells in Washington County to be operating, and it wouldn't allow fracking, and it wouldn't allow blasting. In fact, for those latter two things, the state has acceptable levels for what are determined to be okay seismic events for people. And fourth, if we talk about this fault line, I think that is a red herring, in fact, because it's simply inconsistent to say that it's a nuisance if AWMS operates near a fault line, but it's okay for all of these other wells to operate near a fault line, because the definition of an earthquake is the slipping of the earth along faults. We know it can happen in Washington County safely because that's what's happening. It's happening at greater, stronger, and more frequent levels than what occurred at AWMS. So to say that that's not a nuisance, but AWMS is a nuisance, is simply inconsistent. AWMS is simply asking for its day in court Justice DeWine to be able to present the evidence. And it's to say that, yes, we have shown enough evidence to get to a trial so we can look at the credibility of the witnesses, their opinions that they are making, and the facts that they are presenting. And yes, on the factors that go into a Penn Central claim. We have done that. We've met that threshold. And this court should allow our day in court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen. We will take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision.